All right, computers, computers, computers. Who knows about these crazy computers? We figured out what was wrong. Well, no, I didn't actually figure out what was wrong. We just found out something was wrong, restarted everything, and here we go again. So someday computers will be reliable. Maybe. I'm not sure when, but someday they will be. So far, I'm happy with computers and all that, but as you well know, all of you, no matter what kind of a system you have, no matter what it is, no matter whether you got dial-up or cable or high-speed or DSL or whatever, now and then little glitches get going in there. Anyway, this is the Guy James Show, and we're glad to be with you this afternoon. I got a hold of Ben, and Ben got us up and running again at something wrong somewhere. Wasn't on his end. It was on our end, I guess. So we're here, and you are listening to the Guy James Show. Now, I would sing the opening music to you, but gosh, you wouldn't like that at all. So we've missed that whole thing today, and I guess we can live without it for one day. We've got a great guest coming up a little bit later on for you today. We got Robert Norris, who is director of the Nuclear Weapons Data Book Project, and we're going to talk about the Israeli nuclear weapons and why, oh, why has our government never acknowledged that the Israelis have nuclear weapons and, you know, the various problems that it poses in the Middle East and all that. And we're going to discuss that with him. Also, there's a gentleman over there by the name of Benunu who's being held against his will. Well, he was in an Israeli prison for quite a long time. He was deeply involved in their nuclear program, and we'll ask him about that too, to the extent of his knowledge on that. My goodness, latest thing in on the news, Skillings and Kenny Delay. Now, is that a Freudian slip or what? Kenny Boy Delay. Kenny Lay. A man that the president said he met one time at the at a party, but hardly knew him. Odd how they wrote letters back and forth, though, him calling him Kenny Boy. I don't call anybody names like that that I don't know, do you? No. And, of course, I suspect that Mr. Bush didn't know Mr. Lay the same way he doesn't know Jack Abramoff. What do you think? I think so, too. Anyway, Skillings and Kenny Boy Lay, guilty on just about all the charges. So there you have it on that. The latest news. And let me see, what else do we have here going on? We're going to talk a little bit about Al Gore's new book, new movie, The Inconvenient Truth. You can tell I'm so well prepared today. The Inconvenient Truth. Have any of you seen it? Had a chance to see a sneak preview of it? Man, oh, man, oh, man. Wait till you do see it. It's quite something. Quite something. And I've got a question for all of you, all of our faithful listeners. Had somebody ask me something today that it may puzzle you. It didn't puzzle me. I knew exactly how to answer it, but perhaps some of you, perhaps you know something I don't about the subject. Somebody asked me today, doesn't it bother my listeners when I say negative things about some Democrats? Does it bother any of you? I hope you'll let me know. I hope you'll give us a call at 866-546-5254 or the good old-fashioned email, if you like. Isn't that something? We're talking about email being old-fashioned. Don't bother sending it snail mail. It'll be too late. But does it bother you when I talk about the likes of a Joe Lieberman or, who else? Joe Biden voting for the bankruptcy bill, and our Senator Bill Nelson here in Florida, who I have no, but there are many Democrats that I have little use for, and someone who's calls themselves a Republican, but in my mind is fairly apolitical, really, tag something on themselves that they're really not, I don't think, and boy, she'll just love it that I say that, but I really don't think a lot of people know what they really are politically. And decide for one reason or another, because they want to be on the winning side, or their parents were this or that, or their friends are this and that, and they want to fit in or whatever. I'm not saying that that's, my friend is that way, but that's the way a lot of the political affiliations get started. Does it bother you when I talk negatively about some of our Democrats? That's what she wanted to know. And maybe some of you are just terribly offended when I do that. I don't know. I suspect you're not. That's what I suspect. Now, let's go to the phones. Don't usually go to the phones this early, but let's do that today. Hi, you're on the Guy Jen Show.
This is Juanita. I'll just make it short and to the point.
All right.
No, you just go right ahead, because you're our voice.
Okay. Thank you, Anita. All righty. Thank you for the call.
Bye-bye.
Well, see, there's one vote. I explained that I don't think our listeners do care, because they want the truth. You know, we spoke negatively yesterday of a gentleman in Louisiana who is under a cloud of suspicion, and Nancy Pelosi asked him to get off the Ways and Means Committee, and he's a Democrat. If he's guilty of a crime, get the hell out of the Congress, put him in prison where he belongs if he's guilty. It's that simple. Don't care who it is. And if I don't like the way a certain Democrat votes, why, I say so. Our problem is on the Democratic side, and I don't have to explain it to most of you, is that we've got the huge bulging tent and we can't get along for 5 minutes on anything. We're like just one big family that fights and argues and carries on. And here you got the Republicans over in their nice little white tent, of course. It's a very small tent. Very small tent, about the size of a one-car garage. And, you know, they're over there drinking martinis and everything, and we're over here drinking beer and fighting like hell and throwing some people out of the tent. And, you know, it's just a mess over on our side. As Will Rogers said, I don't belong to any organized party. I'm a Democrat. And we fight and argue, and it's to our detriment, but then again, it isn't. We've solved a lot of things. We Democrats have. I issued a challenge to my Republican friend the other day to please send me a list of all the great things that the Republicans have done for Joe American. Not the fat cats. Send me a list of all the things that the grand old party, not so grand old party, but the grand old party, the elephants, let me know. Send me a big old list of what they've done for Joe and Sally American, as I like to call them. Don't let me know what they've done for the Rockefellers and the Kenny Lays and the people like that. We all know what they've done for people like that and are still doing for people like that. I want to know what they've done for folks like you and me. I suggested that I could write the entire essay on that in 6 seconds or less, maybe much less. Maybe I wouldn't even need to put pencil on the paper, because I really have a difficult time thinking of anything. So I've issued that challenge many times over the years on this program. Many times you've heard me, and I never get an answer to it. Just as I used to always ask, are you proud of Tom DeLay? And I did have a guy call in one Saturday when we were on Saturdays and say, yes, I'm proud of Tom DeLay. And of course, you knew right then and then, there and then, he was drunk because, maybe he was from Tom DeLay's congressional district. That could be, because there's a few idiots there that voted him in office. So, you know, somebody's got to be all for him. And, we had to stop at the gas station this morning, pulled the old vehicle up to the gas station. That's a good question for you. I see I said the vehicle. I didn't tell you what I drive. What do I drive, do you suppose? Do I have a, what do you think? What do you think Guy James drives? Does Guy James drive a Viper convertible? Or a Mercedes? Or a minivan? Or a pickup truck? Or a Chevrolet? Or a Chevy Suburban, one of those big mothers? What do you suppose? It'd be interesting to see, have you guys guess what I drive. Anyway, it holds over $50 worth of gas. I know that. And the wages on the program don't afford the real expensive vehicles. I'll give you a hint on that. And speaking of oil prices, you know, as I often do, I was looking over some video of some things Bush said the other day. And I noticed a couple of speeches where he actually sounded like one of those compassionate conservatives I've vaguely heard about. He actually said the immigrants were human beings. And that, you know, I was somewhat taken aback by that. And, you know, when he was talking about some of his neocon friends who are not so compassionate, calling for massive deportation. He doesn't think deportation is a good idea. And he's absolutely right on both accounts. And how often have you heard me say that? Attempting to deport all the undocumented immigrants in the country would be a complete waste of time, and all we'd be doing would be spending tax dollars to send them back, only for them to come right back again, have the process start all over again, unless, of course, some of his neocon pals have their way and will blow their asses to kingdom come when they try and cross the border again. But most of his talk was about how they don't pay taxes and all that, and that's pure BS. They pay sales tax and they pay property tax, and lots of them pay income tax as well. They're good, decent people, and they work very hard, and most of them I know, and I know many, they don't want anything more than the opportunity to make a living. They don't want extravagant material things. Just hardworking, good people. They just want the basics for their family, and that's another point. Most of them are very good family people. Bush has a problem because of his own compassionate conservatives are against him on this one, and even his mighty evangelical friends are against him on this issue. And I doubt their motives, of course, because I see this whole issue being brought up for at this particular moment is nothing more than a diversion to keep people from hearing other news that's driving the poll numbers of the Republicans right into the toilet, as you well know. But, George, these are the ones, these evangelicals, that you allowed to bring you to the big dance, and they expect you to dance with them. Dance, George, dance, you know. Just remember that, the old cowboy movies, when the guy pulled out his pistol and started shooting at the floor and making somebody dance. That's what the evangelicals are doing to George Bush right now. So, for one brief moment, I agreed with Junior Bush on something, and I don't want to deport the immigrants. And so now Junior's starting to do a lot of talking about the gas station owners gouging the public. He's going to check into it. That's right, Junior. Check out the gas stations when your attention really needs to be on the world headquarters of ExxonMobil and your pals over in Saudi Arabia. And, you know, I was thinking, Georgie, why don't you go over there and use your self-described great friendship with the Saudis and talk them into driving down the price of oil for a while until the American people can recover from these nasty pump prices. Come on, George. When you were running for office, you said they were your pals. And you said it would be an advantage for our country to have a couple of experienced oil men at the helm. So, Junior, it's time to put up or shut up, don't you think? I'm sure all of you listening remember that only a few months ago he said if he could, he'd wave his hand and lower the prices. So why not give it a try? You know, I thought up the whole scenario. You can make a really big deal of it. Make a big deal of flying over to Riyadh on Air Force One and get the pictures of him stepping off the majestic airplane onto the tarmac with the Saudi princes greeting him and all that. You know how they kiss him on the cheek and all that. And then have the press, cameras rolling and all, have them follow the whole entourage to one of the Saudi palaces and sit down and have dinner with them, and then get yourself video telling the Saudis that you'd like them to lower the price of their oil. Go ahead, George, do it. You said they were good pals. Why not? What do you got to lose? If, like you said, you're actually good buds with these guys, like you told us, they would surely understand your problem and want to help you out by lowering their prices. Think of it, Georgie. You're sitting there with Prince Bandar, all smiles, and he says to you, President Bush, I'm going to lower the price of Saudi oil by half. And by the way, I'll get the rest of OPEC to do the same, and that'll save your poor and your middle-class Americans lots of money, and you'll be a hero, and the Republicans will have an overwhelming victory in the coming elections this fall. Do it, Georgie. If you're such good pals with them, do it. But wait a minute. There's only two reasons you wouldn't do this. Number one, you just might not be the good buds that you said you are. Although I doubt that because I saw the pictures of you and the Saudi king holding hands a while back. That was very sweet. And number two, which is what I believe to the most, it's the most likely reason you won't do that, is that you don't want to do it. Why should you get the price of oil lowered and cost your real friends, your really good friends down in Texas, lots of money? And that crap about the poor and the middle class needing a break, screw them. I mean, come on. The poor and the middle class. To people like George Bush. You know, George thinks about it. Let them come up the hard way like you did, Georgie. Let them fail at a few businesses and have their daddy, you know, get daddy's friends to give him part of a baseball team, and you can sell it and make millions, and then let those poor and middle-class people get themselves elected governor of their states. And then president, all on their own, just like you did, Georgie. Yes, sir, you did it the hard way, and they should too. You know, on second thought, forget that trip to Riyadh. Screw those lazy Americans who didn't come up the hard way like you did, Georgie. They're nothing but a bunch of whiners. We hear that all the time. It's those damn Democrats and those liberals. They're nothing but a bunch of whiners. I've got a lot of money. I've got a great job. I've got a beautiful house. I've got a big pension coming in. I'm set for life, and they could have been too if they'd have got out and done everything I did. Some people just don't understand, do they? They never will. I hear them say that all the time. I think people just do not understand that there is not a level playing field for everybody. And I know. Millions of people have overcome incalculable odds to make it in this world. And God love them for doing it. Some people have overcome obstacles to the point it's just absolutely remarkable. We see case after case of it on TV and in the movies and wherever you go. You see cases of good triumphing over evil and the poor triumphing, you know, getting into that glass ceiling. And there's so many cases of it. And that's America. We all have a chance. But we're not all equal in the financial market. It is not a level playing field. You take somebody, for example, right now, you want to talk about a playing field not being level, you take somebody, say, 60 years old and send them out into the job market right now. A job market where, yes, you can get a job as a greeter at Walmart. You can get a job carrying groceries at the local Kroger's or public supermarket, or Albertsons, or wherever it is you happen to get your groceries, Wegmans up in New York. You can get jobs like that. You can get jobs at Burger King and Arby's and McDonald's. There's lots of jobs like that. Was it $5.15 an hour? A little bit more sometimes. Many jobs like that available. I'm talking about a living wage. You get to be 60 years old nowadays, and you go out and apply for a job, and you have no particular skills, for example. Let's say you've worked for General Motors on the assembly line all your life, and General Motors shut down the plant you worked in, and you need to work, and you're 60 years old, and you go out and apply for a job, and just people look down their noses at you if you need to make a living wage. It's not a level playing field. It's not a level playing field for the young. Many kids have educational advantages that others do not, and it's becoming more and more of a problem every single day. Far, far fewer parents being able to send their kids away to college than before. Government loans much harder to get than they were before. Many years ago, it was very possible for a kid to head off to college, maybe have enough money for the first year in the bank and make enough in the summertime to go to another year of school. That's how it was done. Can't do that anymore. And so those opportunities are grinding to a halt for lower and middle class people in this country. Again, the playing field is tilted. So while I do understand that people with money, people who have done well in their lives, and some people who just suffer from avarice, I understand all of that, and God bless them. I'm happy for everybody that does well. I really am. I deserve all the accolades and everything that goes with it, but please, please don't think that everybody in the country has the same advantage, the same is on the same playing field as you are, because they're not. Even localities had a lot to do with it around the country right now. There are areas of this country that are not much affected by the terrible economy we have. There's other areas in the country that are severely affected by it. And it's hard for a young man with a family to pick up and move to another area of the country in hopes of getting a better job. It's tough. But many of these folks don't understand that. I don't know why, but I don't think they ever will. A lot of them anyway. Do I harp too much on that? I suppose I do. But it's just, it's a pet peeve of mine. I just hear it so many times, and especially when we come to the part when we're talking about tax cuts and so forth, and everybody, well, yeah, I'm making $1 million a year, but by God, I'm I did it myself. I made that $1 million. Well, yeah, I inherited my daddy's company, and I work real hard. I worked my way up from vice president to president of the company, and I'm doing well, and I deserve that $1 million a year and that $42,000 tax cut I got. And I'll use that to trade my automobile in on a new one. The $42,000 ought to just be the difference between one new Mercedes and another one, the higher price one with a little leftover. You, on the other hand, working in the factory or down there or wherever you happen to be, they got your $20 tax cut. Well, you can eat at Arby's, you and your wife and maybe one kid for $20 at Arby's. That's your tax cut. Well, hey, we're going to take a break right now, and we're going to get a hold of our guest, and we're going to be back in a few minutes.
Peter said to Paul, you know all those words we wrote are just the rules of the game, and the rules are the first to go. Now talking to God is Laurel begging Hardy for a gun. I got a girl in the war, man, I wonder what it is we've done. Paul said to Petey, you gotta rock yourself a little harder. Pretend the dove from above is a dragon and your feet are on fire. Thing I know to do to turn up the music and pray that she makes it through, because the keys to the kingdom got locked inside the kingdom, and the angels fly around in there but we can't see them. Find a way to help, or they can go to hell. If they can't find a way to help, or they can go to hell. Mm-hmm. led to Petey, you gotta rock yourself a little harder. Pretend the dove from above is a dragon and your feet are on fire. But I got a girl in the war, all her eyes are like champagne. They sparkle bubble over in the morning, all you got is rain. They sparkle bubble over in the morning, all you got is rain. Sparkle bubble over and in the morning all you got is rain.
And we're back with the Guy James Show. Welcome back, everybody. Glad to have you along with us this afternoon. It's a little bit of a cloudy afternoon here in Southwest Florida today. Yes, it's getting into the rainy season. Hey, as promised, we have on the line with us Mr. Robert Norris. He is a senior research associate with the Natural Resources Defense Council and director of the Nuclear Weapons Data Book Project. The reason we had him on today, as we mentioned in our publicity before the program, that we wanted to talk about the nuclear weapons in Israel. And I guess this is, if you're going to talk about nuclear weapons in Israel, this is a man to talk about them. And Robert, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Good to be with you, Guy.
Well, thank you. And thank you very much for coming on the program today. I want to talk about a subject that not a lot of people seem to know much about, and a subject that some people won't talk about, specifically the United States government. Is it in fact true that the United States government has never acknowledged that Israel possesses nuclear weapons?
Publicly, that is true. Now, privately, that's another story. They obviously know about it and have known about it for decades. But the public position, as is Israel's position, is to neither confirm nor deny that Israel has a nuclear stockpile.
Why on both their parts, why is this?
Well, this is a more burning question in Israel, I would say. They have decided to have a policy of ambiguity here and not disclose it, possibly because it might provoke more reaction in that neighborhood than it already does. Of course, it's sort of the elephant in the room here with regard to the Iranian problem of them getting nuclear weapons. There's obviously a kind of double standard. Israel does not belong to the non-proliferation treaty either. And thus, it's not a very well-kept secret, but one they have decided not to talk about.
Well, it brings up a situation as far as the rest of the whole community, the general area there. Mm-hmm. Everybody there knows that Israel has these nuclear weapons, and they know Iran perhaps is wanting to get some. Who knows what the real story is on that? You probably do. Do they see this as an unfair situation, or?
Well, given the history of Israel in that part of the world, they decided early on that they needed to develop nuclear weapons for their security, and did so. And surely, it brings about a situation where others want to get them as well. I mean, that's sort of been the history of the arms race among all the countries, beginning with the United States, and then Russia had to get them, and then China did. And so there is an action-reaction kind of process that goes on. But from Israel's perspective, they feel as though that's the real ace in the hole, and something that they could ultimately draw upon if anyone dared do anything to them. So that's how they view it, and they've made their choices, and we're paying some of the consequences of it now, I think, with this Iranian development, where they seem to be pursuing a bomb as well.
Well, it seems we are paying and might pay a much heavier price in the future over this. The thing I don't understand, and I ask my listeners for questions ahead of time today, and it's, there seems to be one overriding question that so many people have on their mind. We know back during the Seven Days War and all that, we know Israel's capacity to protect themselves. They have never used nuclear weapons. They have an overwhelming superiority, it looks like, with conventional weapons and their air force and all. With that superiority in that whole region, or am I wrong, do they really need nuclear weapons?
Well, they seem to think that they do, and their sort of statement, which is a sentence that goes, Israel would never be the first to introduce nuclear weapons into the region. Now, that's kind of word for word for what they say on this issue when asked, which means that I suppose if anyone attacked them with nuclear weapons, they would retaliate, but they would not use them first. Now, who knows? When push comes to shove, as a weapon of last resort, it might be used, even if they're conventional forces, strong as they might be, were not up to the task. So, you know, these are some of the questions that surround these weapons, and Israel isn't the only one country to own them, and others have rationales themselves for why they decided to possess them.
Really, I guess the French were heavily involved in helping them develop their nuclear weapons. Isn't that not true?
That's true. In the early days here, the French were instrumental in helping them get a reactor and help with training, and Canada had a little role in it as well. But generally, every country that's decided to get nuclear weapons has done so. It's a matter of committing enough resources, having a base of engineers and scientists and so on, and you know, we're witnessing now this again in Iran.
The facilities, the Israelis have been very, very careful about their nuclear facilities over the years, very secretive. And I know that you're involved with this nuclear weapons data book, a five-volume encyclopedia of nuclear weapons. First of all, tell me a little bit about that. Is that comprehensive? It covering the entire world, everybody that's got nuclear weapons, and all about each country that possesses them?
Well, the five volumes are really just devoted to the first five countries that got them, the United States, the Soviet Union, Britain, France, and China. We've yet to write other volumes dealing with these other countries, India, Pakistan, Israel, South Africa had them for a while, and some programs that were aborted before they realized the end result. But we do keep track, even though we haven't devoted a book to them, in other ways through writings and columns and so on. So we try and keep tabs on all of these arsenals and see what developments are going on. And Israel has had the bomb, we think, now for really more than 40 years. In the late 60s, they crossed the threshold and have had them for that long. They're probably on the order of 100 or so weapons, and the place where they were made or are made is a facility called Dimona, which is out in the Israeli desert. Some of your listeners may remember a very dramatic news account of a technician who worked there, a man named Mordecai Vanunu, who smuggled out pictures and had information about Israeli arsenal, and went to the London Sunday Times, this was in 1986, and divulged this information to them, and it made headlines around the world. Now, Vanunu was lured to Rome and kidnapped by the Israeli Mossad and taken back to Israel and was put into prison, often in solitary confinement, for 18 years. He was finally released. I think it's been about a year or so now, but he's very much confined to Israel itself. He can't travel outside, and I'm sure he's monitored quite heavily about what he's doing and what he can say.
They originally said something negative about him that started this whole thing, that he had, what, Palestinian leanings or something, is what they used, isn't it?
Yeah, well, he's actually from Morocco, but that didn't really have anything to do with it. I mean, there is a debate within Israel itself about whether or not Israel should announce that they do have nuclear weapons. I mean, it's kind of a not very well-kept secret that they do, but they've decided on this path, and, you know, that seems to rule for the moment. But there are other Israelis who formally say that you know, this is sort of nonsense, and we should have a declaratory policy which is accurate.
Yes, I that's just the hardest thing for me to understand. I've read a lot about the situation, and it really is difficult for me for them to be coy about this when everybody knows. It's like being in a poker game and everybody knows what your cards are and you still don't want to show your hand. I don't know why it is, but here we have the Israelis at least discussing a unilateral withdrawal of the West Bank and all to hopefully diffuse some of the tension in that area. Do you think it will?
Well, that's a tough one here. I'm really no expert on the Middle East politics. It's just incredibly complex, and anything that might suggest helping the situation out would be welcome. We can keep our fingers crossed that maybe that will help, but it's hard to say. It's so rooted in the area there with so much hatred and animosity by so many people that it's hard to see as a solution for, you know, peace, but maybe it'll help.
So you're going to continue on with your encyclopedia, and you're going to go on with Pakistan and India, and does South Africa actually possess a nuclear weapon?
No longer. They did for a time. They actually built, under the apartheid regime, the white rulers, they built a half a dozen nuclear weapons. And then when apartheid was about to end, they came clean and declared that they had them, joined the non-proliferation treaty, and inspectors came and saw that things had been dismantled, and of course they no longer have them. But there was an instance of another secret program that we didn't know about going on that was successful, but they actually built weapons. And there have been other countries that have started down this path, but then stopped. Taiwan had a program for a while, South Korea, and others looked into it, places like Australia and Canada, and decided not to go forward. Even Switzerland did for a time being. So, you know, these are all considerations taken by leaders to decide on their security interests, and some went forward and some didn't. What causes those to go forward? Well, you have to look at the historical circumstances and how it looks from their vantage point. But we're probably not at the end of it, and there'll be others wanting it as well.
Yeah, what hath we wrought when we started this out? I have to ask you a question. I'm good friends with a very, very well-known columnist that's going to be on the show again soon, and my listeners know what I'm talking about. Anyway, we were talking about this latest episode with Gaddafi. All of a sudden now we're going to be having tea with him in the afternoon in the new American Embassy in Tripoli. He's a good guy now. We have used him to say, our government has used him to say, hey, look what's happened here because we went into Iraq. Gaddafi has capitulated and given up his nuclear program. Now, my columnist friend tells me this, that Gaddafi's program was, and I wondered what you know about this, Gaddafi's program was nothing more than a pile of nuclear junk that he bought from Pakistan in order to turn over to the Bush administration for political reasons so that we could make this deal.
Well, he did have some stuff that he got from Pakistan, and it was peddled by this father of the Pakistani bomb, this guy named A.Q. Khan, who is a black marketeer of enormous proportions, peddling all of this stuff to not only Libya but North Korea and apparently Iran as well, and who knows elsewhere. Now that's a little. I hadn't actually heard that story, that it was just done for those reasons. I mean, how serious was Gaddafi in actually making a bomb program? Well, probably only he would know. But he was buying some stuff that would have enriched uranium. Apparently, there was a bomb design came with it. And again, had he put enough energy and resources into it, he maybe would have had a bomb in some number of years. But I guess for reasons best known to himself, he decided to join the world, and maybe was scared of that he would be next on the list for the American attack or whatever. And so now, yeah, you're right. We're going to have tea with him. But, he's got some oil also. That always gets our attention.
Very good oil. He's got the good stuff.
He got the good stuff.
Yeah.
And better to have him... in a more moderate position than he was. So, you know, for whatever reason, politics are not this pure thing here. It might have all been this Machiavellian design on his part, but in the end, it stopped a program that may have realized a bomb.
Well, that's one less book you have to have in your encyclopedia.
That's one less. We'll just have a short chapter, abbreviated chapter there.
So tell us, you're continuing on with your encyclopedia. You're going to continue on with Pakistan and India and whoever,
yep.
whomever else.
Yeah, if I live long enough. In the interim, though, I do write a column for a magazine called The Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, which is a magazine that's been around for 60 years, founded by those Manhattan Project scientists who decided that... they would help with public education about what we're going to do with this new form of energy. And so I've written for that, and I kind of keep up on these individual countries in columns in there. So this is all prior to perhaps another volume in the series.
Yes. I think one of the most interesting things I've interesting quotes I think I've ever heard in my entire life, I was reading a lot of material on the Manhattan Project, and... And when we first tested our first nuclear bomb, was it a little boy or fat boy? I forget which one.
It was a fat man type in New Mexico, yeah.
That the scientists involved, and you've probably heard the story, got up a pool amongst themselves as to how much damage it would do.
Mm-hmm.
And there were one or two of them that actually thought it may set off a chain reaction and destroy the Earth's atmosphere.
That's right. I've written a biography of General Groves. He was Army general who oversaw this, and a rather amazing story. And his accomplishment is something to behold here, as I document in my book. And you're right, I have that in my book here, that some scientists raised this problem. Now, they did investigate it. It wasn't irresponsible here. There were some very smart fellows on that project, and they decided that that wasn't going to happen, that they weren't going to ignite the atmosphere.
Well, good.
And end life on Earth, and they would go ahead with this test. But the topic did come up, it was considered, and it was decided that that wasn't going to happen. So it was a kind of a low-risk gamble here, and unlikely to happen.
And you wrote a book about General Grove.
I did. It's called Racing for the Bomb. It's... you know, that Manhattan Project story is one we never get tired of here.
No.
It's an amazing, amazing story, and with really characters that are very sharp and focused, and we never get tired of hearing about them. And, you know, that was for all the chips there during World War II, and we thought there might have been a German bomb. Hitler might be building a bomb, and that's what drove our program in the beginning. And, and in the end, it's ushered in this atomic era that we're still wrestling with. And
weren't the Brits involved too at the time? They were in the beginning stages, perhaps, when they heard Hitler was doing one.
Yeah. The British were looking at this as well. And then, of course, during this period, we joined forces, and the British were kind of a junior partner, and sent a team of scientists and technicians to help at Los Alamos and elsewhere. And then after the war, they went home, and there was really a sharp separation, and they went on to build an atomic bomb themselves, which they mastered in 1952, after the Russians had done it in 1949. So, again, anyone who really decides to go after the bomb can probably do it with enough effort.
I think a lot of people aren't familiar enough. You brought up General Groves. I think he's a fascinating study.
I don't think
a lot of people understand one of his other great accomplishments.
And that would be building the Pentagon.
Yeah.
15 months under budget. Well, just a footnote there. That Pentagon wasn't the only thing that he was doing. At the time, before he got the job to build the bomb, he had been in charge of all Army construction for the run-up to the war. I mean, this is just awesome. So he had 100 projects going on, building munition plants and depots and army camps and on and on and on, and one of them was the Pentagon. But that was really only one of dozens and dozens of things he had to keep track of. So when you were going to tap somebody to take on another big effort, they decided he would be the man, and from day one, he put his foot on the accelerator and never let up, and about 1,000 days later, there was a bomb.
Hard-driving man and one of the great administrators of all time in this country.
Absolutely.
I think.
Toughest guy I ever came across here. I mean, this guy was had a will of steel here and had this talent to choose people and administer things that, well, we're lucky to have people like that.
Could use a few now.
In a while when we need jobs done.
Yes. Robert, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Okay.
I have a feeling I could talk with you for a long time about some of the history of this and all, which
we
is
could.
Fascinating. The Racing for the Bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Those of you that are not familiar with that story, you must read it. It's one of the most fascinating chapters in American history. There's no question of it. Robert Norris, thank you so much for being on our program today.
Good to be with you, Guy. Maybe we'll do it another time.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Yeah, I imagine a lot of you do know about General Grove. he was quite a piece of work, and I didn't know that Robert had written a book about General Grove. But I've read many accounts of General Grove, and actually know somebody that knew him. Said he was one of the most difficult men that ever lived on the planet, but if you were told to do something, you better, by God, get it done, or else, that he was just that kind of a guy. And also, not just a tyrant, but commanded great respect by everybody that worked under him and worked for him. And like Robert said, many projects, and my goodness, the Manhattan Project. I don't think a lot of people understand the enormity of that situation. Have you ever been to Oak Ridge, Tennessee? All the people down in Oak Ridge know all about it, but many of the buildings are still there. You know, up in Chicago, at the University of Chicago, the research that was going on there, and then, of course, Los Alamos. An amazing story behind our nuclear bomb, and Robert Oppenheimer, a man whom I feel later on had deep regrets about heading up the team that came up with the atomic bomb. Many of them signed a petition and took it to Roosevelt and asked that they not use it. Scientists knew what they had wrought upon this world when they came up with that weapon, and I think some of them were intelligent and had enough foresight to see what problems that may bring to the world, and my God, has it ever. There are those who would argue that nuclear weapons have been a good thing, that it prevented a possible outbreak of a real Cold War between the United States and the Soviet Union. But I would quickly ask the question, what kind of a Cold War? It would have had to have been a conventional war across oceans, which would have been difficult for both of the countries. So I don't think that would ever have happened. They may have become a superpower on their continent, we most certainly were the superpower on our continent. We had shown everybody that we had the might and the muscle to go over and you know, the industrial capacity to come up with all the weapons we needed for the war, and not only equip us, but other armies as well. I doubt without nuclear weapons that there would ever been as much of a problem as there ended up being in the Cold War at war. At the height of the Cold War, a nuclear attack was something that was not just possible. I think there were a couple of times, and of course the Cuban Missile Crisis, that maybe it was probable. And I think a lot of people don't understand just how close that we came during the Cuban Missile Crisis. They just don't understand. We had a man leading the Soviet Union whom I feel and many other people feel was unstable. Not the kind of guy that you want leading a country, a man with a short fuse. And thank God we had people on our side of the water and some on their side as well. Dobrynin and all that had the good sense to talk this over and get us out of what was nearly a catastrophic situation and may well have ended the world as we know it. That's the closest we've ever come. And God, I hope we never head down that road again. You know, the Pakistanis and the Indians have threatened one another with nuclear weapons. It troubles me that they both have those pointed at one another. The situation in Iran, with them possibly wanting, you know, rattling their sabers now when we're rattling right back, and the Israelis will start to rattle theirs too if the situation gets too tense. Hopefully the Europeans and the rest of the folks in the Middle East will help ameliorate that situation, calm it down, throw a little water on the fire and calm the thing down a little bit. The Iranians certainly are cognizant of the fact that if they would set up off a nuclear weapon, that they would end up as dust in no time if the Israelis wouldn't do it. First of all, the blowback on them, because of the way the atmosphere is in the world, there would be blowback on their own country if they attacked another Middle East country. They'd get a tremendous amount of blowback of nuclear fallout in their very own country. So would they do that? Would they develop nuclear weapons and sell them to terrorists? Nuclear weapons have a fingerprint. There's no question they have a fingerprint, and it's not hard for the right people to figure it out. It would be a day or two or three or maybe a week until if they sold a nuclear weapon to a terrorist and a terrorist actually used it on another country such as ours, that we would figure out where it came from, and again, the country would be dust. So although we look at people sometimes as crazy men, Ahmadinejad over there, a lot of people think he's half nuts. He's not crazy enough to set off a nuclear holocaust for his country, I don't think. I don't think there's been a leader, even Kim Jong-il in North Korea, I don't think there's been a leader crazy enough to do that. Even Khrushchev was not crazy enough to do that. So we just got to keep our fingers crossed that the right guy never does have his finger on the button. And so far in this good old world of ours, the wrong person never has had their finger on the button, and we can just, you know, I think a lot of people think that the Cold War is over between the United States and Russia. I think that many people are totally unaware of the fact that the United States and Russia still have plenty of nuclear weapons pointed at one another, more than enough to destroy the world. Did you know that, a lot of you? Most of my listeners know that, but to those of you that don't keep up on such matters, yes, the United States and Russia do have nuclear weapons pointed at one another still. We just don't talk about it much anymore, and there's not as many as... But, you know, that's one thing I could never understand, that we had thousands of them when... What were you going to do with thousands of them? I never understood that. From a tactical standpoint, you know, a few will do. Yes, they might destroy some in a preemptory attack, but still enough would get through to do the job to destroy each other's countries, and yet we both had thousands of them. It never made a lick of sense to me, but I'm just a farm boy from Ohio, so what do I know? No one's asked me my opinion on it. But there, I gave it to you anyway. Interesting conversation with Robert Norris, and it was for me. I hope it was for you. And do read his book, Racing for the Bomb. I know you history buffs will find it fascinating. General Grove, well, I've gone over that before. General Grove, an interesting man in the construction of the... Not only did he build the Pentagon, take a look at the amount of time it took him to do it. I mean, it was like bang, zoom, it was done. Hey, we're going to... stop for news at the top of the hour. Don't go anywhere. And we'll be right back with one more hour of the Guy James Show coming up in a little over 5 minutes. So hang on.
This is Quality News Network. Former Enron chief executives Ken Lay and Jeffrey Skilling were both found guilty today by a Houston jury of lying about their company's crumbling finances in one of the biggest U.S. business scandals in history. Both could face years in prison when they are sentenced on September 11th. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist says the Senate's sweeping immigration law overhaul is on a glide path to passage today in the Senate, but its future beyond that is unclear because it is so at odds with the version passed in the House. President Bush meets with British Prime Minister Tony Blair today and tomorrow in Washington, with Iraq strategy at the top of the agenda. This just one day after an announcement by Iraqi's prime minister that Iraqi forces will be able to handle security in all 18 provinces by the end of 2007. There's been more violence in Baghdad today, where an Iraqi general and his driver were ambushed and wounded by gunmen. And in another part of the capital city, a bomb killed three people and wounded 11. At the military trial of an army dog handler accused in the abuse of detainees at Iraq's Abu Ghraib prison, a witness has testified that the former commander of the U.S. military prison at Guantanamo Bay urged the use of dogs to the maximum extent possible to control detainees at Abu Ghraib, but did not order their use in interrogations. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has given the Hamas-led government 10 days to accept the national goal of establishing a Palestinian state in Gaza and the West Bank alongside Israel, or he will call for a national referendum, which could lead to a new unity government. The head of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs faced angry lawmakers today on Capitol Hill and described how the theft of a device the size of an iPod containing personal data on 26.5 million veterans may cost taxpayers as much as $500 million. Jim Nicholson also suggested Congress pass a law to do so. In Washington, it appears there is a possibility that Vice President Dick Cheney could be called to testify in the CIA leak case involving his former chief of staff. An assistant attorney general says that the U.S. government, rather than any court, is the best judge of whether to keep its programs secret. Peter Keisler making that claim in a reference to a lawsuit alleging that AT&T illegally allowed the government to monitor the phone conversations and email communications of its customers. Australian troops have arrived, and Portuguese troops are en route to East Timor to help quell a rebellion by disgruntled ex-soldiers there. In Somalia, fighting has intensified between rival militias, with battles spreading across the capital city of Mogadishu, and Pope Benedict XVI is in Poland for a four-day visit. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The Commerce Department reports that the U.S. economy shot forward at an upwardly revised 5.3% annual rate in the first quarter, the fastest growth in 2.5 years. Sales of existing homes fell in April, and the price posted the smallest increase in 4.5 years. New signals that the nation's once red-hot housing market has cooled. New claims for U.S. jobless aid fell by 40,000 last week as claims from Puerto Rico dropped sharply after the end of a partial government shutdown there. More than 20,000 blue-collar workers at General Motors have accepted buyout offers, surpassing the automaker's internal target with a month to go before the deadline. MasterCard is trading on the New York Stock Exchange today in a $2.4 billion offering, one of the largest in 2 years. TiVo, the DVR pioneer, says it lost nearly $11 million in the first quarter. California wines have trounced Bordeaux again in an epic rematch of an historic blind taste test credited with reshaping the winemaking world 30 years ago. Top honors went to a 1971 Ridge Montebello Cabernet from Napa. The highest-ranking Bordeaux was a 1970 Chateau Mouton Rothschild, which placed 6 out of the 10 wines tasted. New Orleans' most popular tourist attraction, its aquarium, reopens tomorrow. It's been closed since Hurricane Katrina, when it lost more than 4,000 animals and fish due to a loss of power and clean water sources. Light sweet crude oil trading at $70.95 a gallon. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 51, NASDAQ up 16, the S&P 500 is up 9. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hi, yes. Welcome back to the Guy James Show. Glad to have you along with us here. It's about, a little bit 6 past the hour right now. Glad to have you along with us. Memorial Day weekend coming up. Have you got any big plans for Memorial Day weekend? Lots of people heading to the lake or the golf or the beach or wherever you happen to go, to the park. And I hope you all remember what Memorial Day weekend is about. Great weekend to make sure that we honor all of those who have given their lives for this country, and all of those who have passed on in our lives of our loved ones and so forth. And a great time to do that and head out to the cemeteries and so forth, and make sure the graves are decorated, as is your custom. And I hope you all have a very, very good Memorial Day weekend, and above all, a safe one. Please watch yourself on the highways. It's, I don't know, it gets worse all the time, particularly where we live here in Southwest Florida. It seems to be demolition derby here. It really does. It's a very, very, very dangerous place to drive. If I gave you the death figures, death toll figures from last year, you would not believe me. I can't think what they are right now, but I've told a few people and they went, no, come on, it's not true. As bad as anything that I think I've seen. How many of you have seen this article by Morton Kondracki? Oh, Morty. As you know, Morton Kondracki is a right-wing stooge on Fox News, and he's also the executive director of Roll Call, the newspaper of Capitol Hill. And it's just amazing, these people on the right. He says, let me just quote a couple of things. I was going to go through and highlight this, and I didn't. The whole damn thing's a highlight to me. It stuck out as such a ridiculous column by a man who is so revered on the right, Morton Kondracki. Mort, a 6-year-old could have written a more logical story than this. I mean, you may have your biases. I mean, that's fine. And as the popular saying goes, you are entitled to your own opinion, but not your own facts. Morty, how can you put things out like this story? This particular one was posted in the San Gabriel Valley Tribune. He's syndicated this around quite a place. I got it off the PasadenaNews.com, PasadenaStarNews.com. But Morty writes this and says, it says enough already. It's harmful enough that ideological conflict and partisan politics are preventing this country from solving its long-term challenges on health care, fiscal policy, and energy. Now it's threatening our national survival. Morty goes on to say, I do not exaggerate. Oh, we will see. I do not exaggerate. Bush hatred has reached such intensity that CIA officers and other bureaucrats are leaking major secrets about anti-terrorism policy and communications intelligence that undermine our ability to fight Islamic extremism. Would newspapers in the midst of World War II have printed the fact that the United States had broken German and Japanese codes? Certainly not. I added the certainly not. He goes on to make a ridiculous argument. It was as though Richard Nixon were back in the White House and tapping the telephone of Democratic National Committee Chairman Howard Dean. Morty. That the Democrats are protesting this man, and I might add, more than Democrats, independents and some Republicans as well, Morty. During a time of war, you say, you have a very selective memory, Morty. Very, very selective. When you criticize anybody that criticizes the president during this time of war, I seem to remember the Republicans lining up at the microphone when President Clinton took action in Bosnia. I seem to remember many Republicans saying, well, we can be for the troops, but we don't have to back this president. Did you forget that, Morty? And all the right-wingers convenient. Isn't it something? You remember those little Mickey Mouse pads that they used to have you'd write on with those little wooden pencil, and then you flip the paper up and zip, it's gone? That's the memories of some of these folks. They're just able to flip that little plastic paper up and everything that was written is gone. They've forgotten what they said. And talking about the hatred for President... hate saying that. For Junior Bush, the hatred people have for him. Morty, 8 years, 8 long damn years of just persecuting Clinton for personal matters, Morty. Personal matters. And what did you get him on? A little episode with a blue dress. That's what you got him on after $70 million worth of investigation by your people. Don't want anybody, you see, coming across with that thing, well, yeah, they investigated him, but he got away with murder and he got away. No, $70 million worth of investigation on he and his wife, and the worst thing they could come up with was a stained blue dress. Ken Starr and his legions investigated this man 24/7, and that's what they came up with. They despised Bill Clinton. They despise him today. They despise Hillary Clinton even more, I believe. And Morton Kondracki has the nerve, the unmitigated gall, to write an article about, oh, this is just terrible. And what do you know? Going back to the question, does anybody listening to this program care if I slap a Democrat upside the head now and then? Our good friend, Senator Joe Lieberman, Joe said just about the same thing as Morton Kondracki. He said it's time for Democrats who distrust President Bush to acknowledge that he will be commander-in-chief for three more critical years, and that in matters of war, we undermine presidential credibility at our nation's peril. This is the man that voted to censure Clinton. Joe. You know, and another thing, Morty, you seem to forget. National security, our hatred is so bad for this man, is so much for this man, has reached that he says it's reached such intensity that the CIA officers and other bureaucrats are leaking major. Do you forget, Morty? Do you forget the name Valerie Plame? An undercover, certifiably undercover CIA agent that you've all tried to pass off as some desk jockey? No. We know different now. We know exactly what she was working on. She was working on counterproliferation, nuclear proliferation for the Iranian situation. That's what she was doing. Undercover. Covertly. A program, I might add, that is of the utmost importance to our national security at this very moment. You outed her. You outed her to the American public for revenge against her husband, who came back from Niger and said there was no yellowcake uranium. Exposed one of your vicious, nasty, horrible lies to get us into that war. Morton Kondracki, how can you have any credibility left whatsoever? I'm so sick of this. I am so sick of this. The greatest threat to our nation's security is not people at the CIA leaking to the newspapers about illegal spying and the NSA programs. The greatest threat to our national security is George W. Bush. He, in and of himself, is the greatest threat to our nation's security and has been for 5.5 years. You know, just go screw yourself, Morty. You don't know what you're talking about, but your legions of right-wing fanatics will read what you wrote and go, "That's right." The people that watch Fox News, "That's right." The knuckle-draggers we like to talk about, good old Bart Kopp likes to mention, the knuckle-draggers. Watching Fox News at night, got that red, white, and blue. Do they still make red, white, and blue beer? If they do, the Fox News people are drinking it. And they're sitting there at night going, "That's right, Morton, that's right, you tell them." And, you know, I tell you, when I read these things, it's utterly fascinating that they can forget. You know, this stuff, when they start writing like this, it sounds like good old stuff from good old Joe Stalin himself. That's where it sounds like it comes from, or any dictator. Any dictator uses the same thing. If you criticize what I have to say, you must hate me. And, of course, hatred is bad for our national security. Therefore, you're criticizing me, George Bush. You're a traitor. Morton Kondracki is a fool. I guess maybe not a fool. He does probably turn a pretty good buck at the newspaper he works at. Just a fascinating story. It really is. And I hope all of you will get to read Morton Kondracki's article, or at least see the comments about it. I just don't want to hear it anymore. I can barely stand to hear it anymore. They're whining for the past 5.5 years now. These morons, these conservatives who dished it out for 8 long years just cannot take it. Oh, please just take me out and shoot me. We've been hearing this whine incessantly for at least the last 4 years, and it's enough. All this talk of Democrats hating Bush is making me crazy. The press never shuts up about it. Especially the right-wing radio and TV talkers. nonstop. They understand the nature of liberals, and they full well know it is anger. It is not hatred on the part of most of us. Oh, sure, there's people that hate them. But it's anger. Anger, for the most part, is righteous and largely rational. In this situation, it's extremely rational. It arises from genuine grievances and is usually a response to some outrages of some form or another in this administration. Hatred, on the other hand, is some sort of an irrational thing. It comes from deep in the soul. And many times, it's an expression of some deep-seated imbalance on the part of the hater. But the Republicans should know all about hatred. We can all recall the Clinton hatred of the 90s, the wild accusations that he planned to enslave America in a new world order. You've all heard that. That he had Vince Foster killed. Oh, my God. I went over that with some moron again recently. That he ran drugs out of the MENA airport in Arkansas, and that he fathered a black love child, and on and on and on. And as Bob Somerby recently observed on the topic, this wasn't just emanating from the fringe elements of the right, though it certainly had a significant audience there. This was coming from the supposedly mainstream conservatives inside the Beltway, and it was broadcast throughout mainstream media. This hatred was totally irrational, especially considering that Clinton was a political moderate by any standard whose policies on international trade, welfare reform, balancing the budget, presented victories for conservative ideals as well. Of course, the same conservatives who engage in this lunacy, projectionists that they are, they've got a habit of accusing liberals of the very behaviors in which they themselves avidly participated and fomented during the Clinton administration. But I, you know, as I've said many times before, this is the majority of this anger is based on real policies and real actions by both Bush and his administration. This is not hatred. It is anger. Real, righteous, and well-grounded anger. Anger can be a healthy thing, especially if it's based on solid reasons and some real grievances. Anger over real injustices motivated the American Revolution, the anti-slavery and the civil rights movement, and the women's suffrage. You look back through history, and there are many, many, many examples of righteous anger. So, let's put a stop to this. All of my liberal and progressive friends, let's put a stop to this. Let's don't let them get away with this rhetoric again. They're used to having us back down when they start with the name-calling and the false accusations. This time, it's going to be different. This time, we need to call them on it on every single occasion. I sent Morton Kondracki an email with my grievances about his little story there, but I didn't hear from him. No, I didn't. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, my name is Jim. How you doing?
Hi, Jim.
This is my first experience with you, and I've enjoyed what you've had to say.
Well, thank you.
And I think you've had a certain angle of clarity to it that I haven't heard before. I've heard from other people, but you know, I certainly agree with what you said about Republicans, because their hatred is just basically one based on retribution, I think, and their war against the middle class in this country, and the polarization of wealth that's occurred, and the fiscal waste that has occurred since Bush took office in terms of blood and treasure. It's just appalling to me.
It should be against the law for them to call themselves conservatives.
Oh, no, they're not conservative anything. They've wasted more than anything I've ever known. And you know one thing about Bill Clinton. And I'll say this for John Kennedy, too. If these guys had been in bed with all the women they say they've been in bed with, I don't think they would have ever had time to have gone to work.
Good point, Jim.
I mean, you know, it's just incredible. My God in heaven.
Yeah.
And for Hillary Clinton, I will say this. I know a lot of people don't like her, but she took estate something and made it into sugar, and she turned it around. And I've got to have I have a lot of respect for Mrs. Clinton. She stuck by her husband, and she took care of that, and she became a senator. And, you know, you can't deny her accomplishments.
She's a tough, tough woman. And, you know, part of it is that part of the reason they despise her so much is for that toughness. And, you know, the thing that I find amazing is so many conservatives admired Margaret Thatcher for her toughness.
Oh, the Iron Lady.
Yes, but Hillary Clinton is just every bit as tough, and she's reviled for it. You know, the old double standard again.
Well, she can get my vote any day.
Well,
I want to thank you for having me on your show.
Well, Jim, thanks for calling. Any old time.
And I appreciate what you have to say. You keep up the good work, okay?
Thank you. Good call.
God bless you.
Well, a new caller. Always good to have a new caller. I do appreciate hearing from new callers. I most certainly do. And appreciate having all of you folks on the line today. We kind of went off on old Morton Kondracki there a little bit. Which reminds me. How many of you saw... Geez, I'm having one of those brain things right now. Oh, man. I can't believe this. I cannot believe this. The Economist on CNN in the evening. Had Tony Snow on last night. Cannot believe I'm sitting here and cannot think of this man's name. I know his name better than I know Tony Snow's. Anyway, geez. He had Tony Snow on his program last night and mentioned that he had been blackballed by the White House. Now, this is a good Republican here. He'd been blackballed by the White House for 4 years that they wouldn't let anybody come on his program. So Tony Snow comes on last night. Lou Dobbs, I'm talking about. Finally, it went drifting through that mind of mine, that minefield. Minefield of a mind of mine. And Lou has him on, and you know, Lou, I'm liking Lou Dobbs more all the time. Yeah, he's a hardcore Republican, he is, but he's been doing a pretty good job lately. I don't agree with everything he says, but he's called a spade lots of times lately, and the Republicans don't like it that he's done it. They consider him a real turncoat nowadays. But he's got Tony Snow on there last night, and some of the looks that he gave when Tony was given his answer. He thanked Tony for being on there, and in Lou's intimidable way, he says to Tony Snow, "Well, I want to thank you for coming on the program, Tony, because, as you know, I've been blackballed for..." He didn't use the word blackballed. I can't think what word he did use, but been blackballed, essentially what it boiled down to, for the last 4 years, and so nice of you to come on. And Tony right away says, "Oh, don't get me involved in that. I don't know." And every time Lou would ask him a question, Snow would say, "Oh, no, don't throw that brickbat at me." He used that one several times, and no matter what Lou said. Now, I want to ask everybody a question here. You may not like Lou Dobbs. I don't know. But I feel Lou Dobbs a pretty honest guy. Whose opinion would you trust on facts and figures and a good assessment of the economy today? Would you trust his opinion, or would you trust former Fox flunky Tony Snow? I'm not saying Tony's not a well-spoken guy. Very well-spoken, and probably the perfect choice. Perfect choice for the Ministry of Propaganda for the Bush administration. Perfect choice, I think. He's well known amongst the press corps. A lot of the press corps people really like him, have worked with him, and so they won't challenge him very much. I don't think. Oh, Helen will. Of course, Helen will. Thank you, Helen. God bless you, Helen. But... you know, whatever Lou brought up last night, old Tony just recited just like machine gun fashion, brought up You know, all the economy that's just smoking, the jobs are this, and then we got the unemployment down to this, and we got this and this and this and this. And oh, Lou was coming back with, hey, Tony, that's bullshit, and you know it, and you know, it's what he was saying. And oh, no, let me tell you this. And Snow was, he was shoveling it fast. Real fast. And we all needed our hip boots on because I've never seen anybody. I have never seen a press secretary shovel as hard and fast as Tony Snow did on the Lou Dobbs show last night. And I'm not kidding. I have never seen that. Not that Nazi that started out for the Bush administration. What was his name? Anyway, and then we went to McClellan, and I'm having trouble with names today. I don't know why. But I'm serious. I've never seen anybody shovel it as hard and fast as Tony Snow did last night. So I think he's a perfect choice. I want to congratulate him. I'd still like to know the real story, why he gave up a couple mil a year on Fox and with his radio show to go to work for $157,000 a year as a press secretary. Somebody is making up the difference. You can bet your hiney on that. You most certainly can. But, oh, he was good. He was good. Not believable, but man, just bang, 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 right back with the answers. Just never didn't miss a lick. And I suppose all the right-wingers, I can just see the freepers that watched that last night. Oh, you tell them, Tony. Oh, yeah. Hey, we're going to pause for a quick break. Promised everybody a good song today that I found, and it's by a guy named Josh Ritter, and it's called Girl in the War, and I hope you enjoy this.
Peter said to Paul, you know all those words we wrote are just the rules of the game, and the rules are the first to go. Now talking to God is Laurel begging Hardy for a gun. I got a girl in the war, man, I wonder what it is we done. Paul said to Petey, you gotta rock yourself a little harder. Pretend the dove from above is a dragon and your feet are on fire. Thing I know to do to turn up the music and pray that she makes it through. Because the keys to the kingdom got locked inside the kingdom, and the angels fly around in there, but we can't see them. Got a girl in the war, Paul, I know that they can hear me yell. If they can't find a way to help, or they can go to hell. If they can't find a way to help, or they can go to hell. Said to Petey, you gotta rock yourself a little harder. Pretend the dove from above is a dragon and your feet are on fire. But I got a girl in the war, Paul, her eyes are like champagne. They sparkle bubble over in the morning, all you got is rain. trouble over, and in the morning all you got is rain.
Oh, man, I like that. I like that. Maybe everybody in the world heard that before today except for me. That could well be the story, but I love that song. Every once in a while, one just comes up and hits you. Josh Ritter, Girl in the War, and went to his website and looked. Oh, man. Man, I like that guy's music. I really do. How many of you watched American Idol last night? Come on. Come on, come on, come on. Admit it. Admit it, you did, didn't you? You did admit it. You did. Come on. Raise your hands. I know you watched it. A lot of you did, anyway. I did. It is extremely, extremely rare. You could ask my wife, extremely rare that I could sit in front of a TV for 2 hours and watch a program. But I will tell you this. I was highly entertained by that entire program last night. Call me silly, call me whatever you want to. I loved that program last night, and I like Taylor. I like him a lot, and they can say what they want to. I heard Laura Ingraham this morning, bitch that she is, making fun of Taylor and making fun of all the contestants on that program. And let me tell you, there were some good, damn good people on that program this year. And Elliot Yameen, perfect example of a pure amateur, never had taken to the stage before. He goes up and look at what he did. He got into the final three, and it's what, you know, everybody loved the guy. And Taylor and Catherine, geez, come on, the girl's got the voice of an angel. She can sing. Look at I mean, she's gorgeous. She'll make it. And little Paris that was in there earlier in the year, she'll make it. I can't think of the large girl. What was her name? You know, she can belt out a song with the best of them. The bald-headed rocker, Chris, he can sing. There were a lot of really good singers. And I'm sorry, if you don't agree, we don't agree. But I'm fessing up. I watched the program last night for the entire 2 hours. I didn't have 2 hours to spare, but I watched it, and I loved every last minute of it. So there. Have your fun with me. Hey, thanks for... what am I doing here? I was looking... Oh, yeah, I want to thank... thanks for Ray Miller. Hey, Ray, thank you for the email. I was looking over my email. I told you how adventuresome I'm getting here with the technology nowadays. Looking at my email during the song that was playing. Hi, guy. I asked the question earlier in the program today whether my listeners minded if I said something negative about a Democrat if I felt like it. Somebody had asked me that earlier in the day. And, you know, what do the Democrats think when you say something? Because I've heard you say things against Democrats. Well, here's an answer. Hi, guy. As an American living overseas, Holland, I have to agree with you on it does not make any difference if a bad apple is a Republican or a Democrat. If they break the law, they should and must pay for deed which is against the law. These are the people who are supposed to look out for our rights. I only hope that in the future we see more of the action that we saw from the FBI. If they're crooked, fry their butts and send them to jail. Keep up the good work, Ray Miller. Well, thank you, Ray. Thank you, thank you, thank you for your email today. Got another one here from Ed Andrix. I'm sorry that I'm unable to call during your show. I'm find myself wanting to add to your show, but I'm unable to as I am working. Well, Ed, keep working. Don't give up working. Please keep it coming and keep speaking truth to power. Well, thank you very, very much, Ed. It's good to hear from you as well. We hear from lots of our wonderful listeners, and I do enjoy that. I get a big bang out of listening to reading what you folks have to say. I really do. And where was I going to go with this? Oh, I know what it was. I didn't want to let this show pass today without talking about Al Gore's movie. Inconvenient Truth. And they are just railing away against Al Gore, the conservatives are on this. Just letting him have it. I don't care where you live. There may be some isolated places where you might not be affected. But I got to tell you, I mean, here's how I feel about it. First of all, you know, I love Al Gore. I love Al Gore. He's got his warts. We all do. I've got more than most. But could Al Gore have named his movie anything better than An Inconvenient Truth? How much more inconvenient could his film be for the right-wingers who want to totally deny any environmental problems? They'll just all go away. I was reading an email here during the let me see if I can find this quick here from one of our right-wing friends who regularly writes to the program. Am I not going to be able to find that right now? Where is it? Oh yeah, here we go. Global warming, oh my, this is a hot topic. Well, guy, let's assume this is happening. Now, see, there you go. There's a right-wing thought that let's assume. We're not assuming this happened. We have the facts. He says, I don't believe that man has any significant role. I assume it's possible that some of the pollutants don't help. Yet I strongly disagree they contribute in any significant way to the cause of global warming. Strongly disagree. We have only been tracking temps for a short time in the grand scheme of things. Now, Michael, you should know that it's possible to take core samples and find out a lot of things that we can find out back for 100 million years. How can one make the leap that man is causing global warming is beyond me. It seems plausible that it's simply a cyclical event the planet goes through. Mount Pinatubo spouted out. With one eruption, more greenhouse gases than all the pollution created. You know, how many times have you heard that one? That's a Rush Limbaugh special right there. And he doesn't believe we're running out of oil either. So, anyway, no disrespect, Michael, but you don't know what you're talking about on that. They do. The right-wingers just want to totally deny that there's any environmental problems at all. And just gave you an example of it. I think they're just going to go away. Let's get rid of the EPA and any notion that anything humans do on the planet has anything whatsoever to do with our environment. Let's just pretend the Love Canal episode never happened. A lot of you aren't old enough to remember that. If look it up, please. Love Canal. Mm. And you know, let's just pretend our rivers and streams are not polluted. Let's pretend that our oceans are not becoming polluted either. Let's just pretend that we can spray any chemicals that we want on our farm fields and have runoffs and all into all of our streams and rivers and lakes with no environmental effects at all. Let's pretend the emissions from our vehicles are not having any damaging effects on our environment at all. Let's pretend. That seems to be the Republican answer to all of our environmental concerns, and that's why this movie by Al Gore, An Inconvenient Truth, is a must-see for everybody. You know, all of my right-wing friends listening, I think you need to go see this because you know what? You just might. I know it's a long shot, a real long shot, but you just might learn something. You just might learn something, and that you learn might cause you to go do some actual research on the environment. And if you do that, you'll find out some of the things Al Gore is trying to tell you is absolutely true. Al's movie title is Inconvenient Truth is very, very, very inconvenient for these Republicans. You know, they might just have to face some of these problems for a change instead of sweeping them under the rug all the time. Nuclear waste, not a problem. The spent uranium from ammunition in Iraq, nah, it's no big deal. It's amazing how the Republicans want to pretend that we can do any damn thing we want to the good Earth and she won't be damaged at all. It's amazing. We can't do any damage to her. Mother Earth is rough and tough, and we just can't damage her at all. I guess most of them have forgotten what it was like when the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland, Ohio was on fire. I have not forgotten. Most of them have forgotten the orange skies over Gary, Indiana, from the factories belching out hundreds of thousands of tons of pollutants into the air. I have not forgotten. I remember when that whole city was orange. The cars, the houses, the streets, the yards, everything. They've forgotten what it was like in Los Angeles. When I was a little kid, we would visit my uncle there. This is a fact. And in fact, when we visited, we went to Disneyland on the morning of its opening day back in the 1950s. Boy, am I giving away my age. We couldn't see much because of the fog. And it wasn't until a lot of years later that I found out it wasn't fog at all. It was something dangerous to our environment called smog. Didn't know that when I was a little kid. You know what was causing it? The cars. The cars. Have you any doubt at all? Any doubt? Please be reasonable and use your heads on this, you right-wing friends of ours. Have you any doubt at all that had it not been for the EPA, the smoke would still be belching from huge smokestacks all over America? Is there any doubt that there would be hundreds of love canals? There would be smog in half the cities of America, and many, many, many rivers would be on fire because of the chemicals that would have been dumped in them. The big businesses that have been forced by legislation, the EPA, to clean up their acts would have made things worse. Much worse without someone making them actually do this. Yeah, it's inconvenient, all right. Really inconvenient for the Republicans right now. They're under attack on almost every front because they've failed the American people on almost every front, and that includes protecting our environment. Someone needed to remind them that our air, our water, and our land needs to be protected from runaway industrial pollution, and Al Gore is just the man to do it, and they are afraid of this movie. Afraid. You can see the fear in them. You can see a lot of fear in the Republicans lately, but they're particularly afraid of this movie. Make no mistake about it, they will vilify him once again, as they've done many, many, many times before, but it won't stop him from bringing forth the truth, and they just don't want to face that truth. The scales have tipped against them. They know it. And this film is just one more reminder to the American Republic, the public who is serious about the job of protecting our environment. You know, it just reminds the public who's serious and who isn't. And I wouldn't have to say another word. We all know who's serious about the environment. And who isn't, don't we? Wouldn't have to mention any parties, would I? I wouldn't have to mention the depleted uranium. I wouldn't have to mention any of the things that I just mentioned at all. I would not have to mention a single one of them. If I walked out on the street and stood on the corner, even where I live, in a hardcore Republican red area of the country, if I went out on the street corner and asked every Joe and Sally American driving or walking by the street corner that I'm on, who's for the environment and who isn't, if they're to be honest, you know what the answer would be. This has got nothing to do with partisanship. At least it should not have anything to do with partisanship. How can it be partisan to love and protect the good earth? How can that be partisan? How can that be made partisan? How has it been made partisan? I'll tell you how it's been made partisan. You know it has. It's a battle of big business against the little guy once again. Big business wanted to pollute the streams and rivers and oceans and lakes in our country. Big business did do that. Big business did want to pour pollutants into the air and destroy the air so that we'd all have to wear gas masks. They did it. They would continue to do it. They would never have stopped it had we not stopped them. It's once again, as it always is, it comes down to follow the money. Big business would have choked every American to death till the skies turned black and you wouldn't be able to breathe without an oxygen tank in some places in this country. Big business would have done that without a second thought. So what? So what if those houses in Gary, Indiana were orange? People that owned them didn't have to live there. The people that owned those factories. The people that own the big factories that belch out the black smoke, they don't live next to those factories. They've got a home in Morocco and a home in Naples, Florida, and a home in Southern California and a home in New York. They wouldn't have to breathe that air. So why would they worry? So what if there's carcinogens thick in the air and half the neighborhood gets cancer and the kids get leukemia? Skin cancer on the people around the Love Canal and their homes are destroyed and their lives are destroyed. So what? Why does it matter? We don't live there. You see, we're Republicans. We own these places. We're in the investors in these places. We don't have to work in these places. We don't have to suffer these conditions, and we don't have to live there. We're not concerned. We'll tell you we are, but we'll continue to belch the black smoke in the air. We'll say, we'll put some fish in the local pond and say we've done our job. Never mind, they're floating on top of the pond the next day. I've seen that happen. No, sir. I actually know of a big personal story. Even after the EPA started, I know this for a fact. And I will do them a favor and not mention the name of the company. But a very big company that is a very big contributor to the George Bush campaign in Ohio. Very big contributor. Actually, is now an ambassador. I'm narrowing it down, aren't I? I can tell you for a fact that after the EPA was started, that the Timken Company, one of George Bush's favorite people, when the EPA came along and said they could no longer pollute the skies with their emissions coming out of their smokestack, they waited until it was dark, and that is when they burnt the oil that the excess oil that was left over from the heat treating and all that sort of stuff during the day, all the sludge and everything. They always used to burn it, and the EPA told them they could not burn it anymore, so they stopped, and they just saved it up during the day, and they waited till dark came, and then they did it. So there are the good intentions right there of what the good corporate. Our good corporate buddies will do for us right there. Because they didn't want to spend the money to do it right. Because that might, they might not be able to have the really good marble countertops on their third home someplace. Follow the money. And Al, I'm really proud of you. I hope every American sees that movie. I really hope every American sees that movie. It's important, very important that we all do. Ran across a couple of really interesting things today that I thought you might like to know about. Just something in passing, a little something for you to chew on. Washington Post put this out, by the way. My investigative reporters didn't come up with it. The Washington Post did. My investigative reporters, I haven't heard from them lately. I guess their paychecks must have bounced. I don't know. The North Carolina Republican Party asked its members this week. You know what I'm going to say, don't you? Some of you are ahead of me. I know some of you are ahead of me. The North Carolina Republican Party asked its members this week to send their church directories to the party. Oh, my. Now, what would the North Carolina Republican Party want church directories for? Oh, I don't know. Can you guess? Oh, my. During the 2004 presidential race, the Bush-Cheney campaign sent a similar request to Republican activists across the country. It asked churchgoers not only to furnish church directories to the campaign, but also to use their church facilities as bases for political organizing. Well. As I used to say, well, shut my mouth. Just thought that was a little interesting tidbit there that you might enjoy today. And the Democrats, somebody on Democratic Underground posed the question, and I copied this. I don't even know who, forgive me, who put this up. DMESG posted this. The question we must ask anti-impeachment Democrats. You know, there are a lot of Democrats running around now saying, well, you know, we better just not say anything about this and impeachment stuff because they're going to think we're really bad and everything. And we don't want them to think we're bad and want to impeach the president because, you know, they'll just think that we're being mean. Because, you know, he's really a good guy and everything, and we don't want to, you know, we don't want to embarrass ourselves and say that we'll impeach him, no matter if he has a list of illegal crap mile long. We don't want. So somebody said the question we absolutely must ask anti-impeachment Democrats is, every single chance we get, if you are against impeaching George Bush on the charges of illegally surveilling U.S. citizens, B, rendering persons to countries that use torture, C, lying to Congress and the nation on causes for a war, D, holding U.S. citizens without trial, arraignment, bond, or access to consul, and E, gross incompetence and cronyism that led pretty directly to the deaths of hundreds of U.S. citizens and the waste of billions of dollars, if you wouldn't impeach a president for that, what would a president have to do to get impeached? If you wouldn't impeach him for that, what are suitable grounds for impeachment, if not those things I just mentioned? I thought that was a great post. And to everybody, every one of these wimpy Democrats, can you say Lieberman, can you say Bill Nelson, to every one of these wimpy Democrats, ask him that. As I sure will, every chance I get, and you should as well. I just think that's a perfectly appropriate thing to ask any Democrat. Oh, we shouldn't. Let's be nice. Let's just be nice. Let's not stir things up. Let's just have a good old fashioned election in this country like we used to, and let's just all get along with those Republicans. And, you know, the thing is, if we're real nice to them, maybe they'll be real nice back. If we don't treat them bad, you know, if we don't try and impeach him and everything, maybe they'll be nice back to us. And maybe his last 2 years of his presidency, maybe he'll go along with some things we want. You've been drinking real heavy if you think that had ever happened in this Bush administration. Truly. My, we've covered a lot of interesting territory today. I, as you know, I'm a history buff, and I particularly enjoyed having Robert on talking about the nuclear weapons in Israel. I do find that an interesting situation, and he most certainly does as well. Oddly enough, he could not answer the question that I needed to have answered, that I wanted to have answered, and I guess if he can't answer it, nobody can. Why are they keeping it a secret? Everybody knows they've got them. Everybody knows they've got them. The whole world knows Israel has not just one, two, half a dozen, three dozen nuclear weapons. We know they've got at least 100 of them. So why don't they just tell everybody, hey, we've got, and he's right, they have not signed on to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. They haven't. Why? We condemn anybody else that hasn't signed on to that. And we do want to remind you once again, everybody, if you're planning on having those little parties tonight, we already mentioned it in the show earlier, but Kenny Boy and Mr. Skillings were pronounced guilty today of, I don't know, 700-800 charges. I don't know, maybe 35 apiece or something like that. I don't know how many it was, but it was a bunch. A bunch. Hey, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. I don't know about you, but I had a good time today on the program. I really did. I learned some things, and hopefully you learned some things. And it's always a pleasure to be with you. It really is every single day. And so, I do want to remind you, as always, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Have a great one. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll be right back.
my mail, they listen on my phone. They're sneaking and they're peeking, and I'm never quite alone. They're spying and they're prying, but I shouldn't be alarmed. They're only gone.